Good morning, other members and our, I don't know whether I should call them colleagues. We should. Our colleagues from the Department of Trade and Industry who have revealed their time to participate in the work of the committee for this morning. Welcome all of you. The Director General, Mr. Lionel Lowe, and the other colleagues. We appreciate it. Of your presence here. As I was coming here, I asked myself, are we meant to be here by 10 o'clock, or are we supposed to start the meeting by 10? You know, some of us who grew up in Joburg, we talk about two time frames. We have the time frame on the one side of the Hotali, which is the one part of the country, and the other side of Uncle Charlie. From the southern side of Uncle Charlie, when you say it starts at 10, it starts at half past. So I'm glad to see that we are on the better side of Uncle Charlie, where we're probably starting at 10. Just to note that I'm appreciative to our colleagues, particularly Jupeka, who has now become my friend. I can call him on the first name. Who's our secretary to this committee, and then also to the other colleagues who are supporting him so that we can work efficiently here. We appreciate your presence in this meeting. I'm mentioning that because I want to have us having a group of talk, which is when we start every meeting. We start our first item would be something that, welcoming matters like that. But we also, what is not on the agenda, we introduce, is the adoption of the minutes of the last meeting. Now, we have agreed that we are not going to talk about the minutes, but the minutes. We want the minutes to just capture the essence of our conversation. And not for it to be an empty document that covers the entire conversation. I hope that I can get the approval of the whole House that that would be the way in which we will have the minutes captured. What means, therefore, Honorable Sukha, is that we take our own notes, we will make sure that whoever presents to us give us their presentation. For now, we might be a little bit lenient and say we receive the presentations in the meeting, but within 4 months, 4 weeks from now, we are going to attempt to make sure that you have the presentation at least 24 hours before the meeting.
May I interrupt you? May I come into my group?
You may.
You know, if you say 24 hours before the time, it becomes very difficult because we come from different provinces. If you look at Honorable Dikhali, she flies from Limpopo somewhere and she's got his connecting flight. We don't, our committee secretary will know that it's only Durban and Joburg and Cape Town that can do things very quickly within 2 hours. Us from the rural provinces, we can't. Our program must be so fixed that we do things and plan properly so that we can strive to get our documents. Not, it must be 7 days. We must have a step program. It's only in emergencies that we must settle for 48 hours and not even 24. And then we must have an electronic version of it so that when you arrive at like Monday at 1:30 in the morning, after 12 in the morning at your house in the case of park, then you can actually read through that at night or in the morning hours early. So 24 hours is a bit tough for us to say something. I think because of the nature of our provinces, we must make it a bit longer. Thank you.
Honorable Falangin, we hear you. I think that spirit of what you say. Does it also call you honorable?
No, I'm hearing you.
Thank you. What the point we are trying to make here is to say that we are mindful of the importance of not giving you information at the 11th hour. And when we say at least 24 hours, we're not saying that that would be all. We hear you, therefore, when you are saying that you need to have it earlier. In my meeting this morning with the members of staff, we said that most of us do not yet have our iPads because they prefer to email things to us. But if we don't have our iPads, it's important that we look at alternative ways to get the information. Like if we are practical. The presentation that will be made to us today, we may not have. And we can quite understand that our colleagues are coming from Pretoria, and it's very important information that they have to give to us, and it has to be up to date. If we look at the agenda, therefore, we have the opening and welcome that we have done. We have apologies. We have consideration of the minutes of the previous meeting. Then we're going to have the presentation from our colleagues in DKI. We're going to then have a discussion of that. But it's free to the presenters to guide us as to how you would want that discussion to happen. If you feel at the end of any important part of the presentation, you'd want discussion, we in your hands. And then finally, we'll have the announcements and closure. Can I have a proposal for the adoption of the agenda? Okay, Honorable Hanlian, seconded by Honorable Dezabosh. Can I give an opportunity for us to hear if we have any apologies? Are there any members of the committee that's not here? I can't see anybody. Is Honorable Fabian?
No, we see must have sent an apology to the chair person.
We didn't get an apology. Did you get an apology, Secretary?
No, I didn't get an apology.
The chairperson, you must tell that our secretary that he's playing with the life of our secretary. Because we will annihilate her if the apology didn't go through. So he must be very sure. Thank you.
Okay, can we say that would be ratified, but he is then the only honourable member that's not in the meeting. Can I then request that we look at the minutes of the last meeting? We have the first page of the meeting that basically indicates who was there. So there wouldn't be any changes to that unless you have a problem with the spelling of the surname. So that page is accepted. Page 2 was just the introduction, the proceedings, and then the adjournment. Any changes on page 2? No. Can I have a proposal for the acceptance? There's a honourable member there that's proposing the acceptance. Honourable members, I am going to give you an opportunity, Honourable Member Ntebe, to introduce ourselves just now, particularly to our resource team from the DTI so that they know who we are. Can we start with Honourable Bavada?
Thanks, Chair. My name is Limoro Chere. I'm from the Northwest, and I represent the African International Congress.
My name is Juan Amukwena. I'm from the Free State, and I'm presenting the Economic Development Congress.
I'm Kiwe Joy Bitumunye. I'm from Malanga, and I'm also a whip of this committee.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Lee Chosuka, member of the committee from the Eastern Cape, PE in particular, the 26th.
Thank you, Chair President. Good morning to everybody from the African National Congress. My name is Clara Hale, and I am a chairman and delegate from the Limpopo Province. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. I'm Elder Van Lingen. I'm from the Eastern Cape, and I serve the people of South Africa through the NCOP by means of the Democratic Alliance.
Good morning. My name is Jacques Lund, and I'm a delegate from the Eastern Cape, and I represent the Democratic Alliance.
Thank you very much. Can we have the staff introducing themselves? Ian Parliament.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Tekam Tileni. I'm the committee secretary.
Good morning. My name is Jadira Andrew.
Good morning, I'm
good morning, everyone. My name is Boma Kutsi. I'm the officer.
Thank you. Can we, before, I know it's going to be unorthodox, Mr. October, but just introduce your staff so that I can just also get the staff at the bottom before your presentation.
Thanks, Honourable Sandra Q. Starting, Stephen Hannibal, he's our chief economist at the VCI. Then it's Garth Strachan. He's our Deputy Director General for Industrial Development and Industrial Policy. Then Sarah Chwane, she is our Deputy Director General for Corporate Services in the department. Jody Skulls is our Group COO, Group Chief Operations Officer. I'm Lionel October, the Director General. And then we have Max Gibela, who is our head of our strategy unit. And then Buzin Gwenya is from our corporate services or consumer and regulatory division. And then you all know Savard, who is the parliamentary officer.
Thanks very much. Abdullah.
Good morning, I'm Abdullah Fee on the Farm Parliamentary Research working with the DC.
Can we have the other people there just introducing yourselves as well, please?
Good morning, I'm
warm words of welcome to all of us. It's my honor now to give over to the Director General, Lionel Kober, to lead us in the presentation.
Thank you, Honorable Chair, for the opportunity to present to the Select Committee on Trade and International Relations the Department of Trade and Industry annual performance plan. I will, given that this is the first time we are doing this in this administration, honorable members, we'll cover the following issue. I'm going to the department's vision, mission, and our strategic goals, how we are structured as a department, and then I'll look at the key interventions for the financial year 2014-2015. I will also look at our budget and how we look at that because of our resources, and then conclude with some of our strategic challenges. Firstly, let me spend a bit of time on this issue, but because our vision is, as a department, we want to achieve a certain kind of economy. I think there's three key words in our vision of what kind of economy and society we want to create. The first word there, which is the most important one, is industrial. We want to create an industrialized economy, and I think our minister often repeats it, but there's no country that has ever achieved full employment or has ever become prosperous and rich without being industrialized. You cannot solve your problems if you are just a commodity exporter, primary producer of commodities, a mining economy. You need a diversified industrial economy with a strong mining sector, strong manufacturing sector, strong agricultural sector, strong services sector. But the key word, all our, as former colonies, we miss this key element of industrial base in our economy. We are traditionally supposed to be just exporters of raw material, and so the key economy driver was an industrialized economy. The second word that is very important is that we need to be globally competitive. Because we are a small open economy, only 50 million people in a world of about 4 or 5 billion people, we rely on being competitive in global markets. And finally, because of our history and our legacy, the third important word is inclusive. We cannot have growth without ensuring that there is redistribution and the equal economy, and that all South Africans are included in this economy. So inclusive growth is a very important part, and that defines our vision as a department. You will then see that coming from that vision, we have strategic goals as a department we want to achieve. The first is, as we said, is transform the economy, and now given the new emphasis that the president laid out in the overall address, is we want to radically transform this economy and promote industrial development. The third bullet point is also key. We need a very active, broad-based black economic participation in the economy. And finally, part of being a developmental state, we need a professional, ethical, and customer-focused administration. So a very effective department. We know in other countries, if you look at Japan, South Korea, the reason they were able to achieve success is through a very excellent administration and government department. So that is our strategic goal. So we have 7 programs, and you will see then how this links to us. But our department is divided, and we have deputy director generals for each program or division of the department. Just to highlight there, as I said, most important is our administration. Then we have international trade program. We have national development, and then an incentive administration. Then, as you'll see, aligned to that is our key programs, and this is spelled out. But as you know, our apex is our industrial development. Then we have a program and a cluster around trade investment, around economic empowerment or broadening participation, regulation and administration. So you could see there then how we have, around our core vision, we have developed our organization, and our program are all aligned to that. Honorable Chair, to begin, before getting into our key strategic objectives and plan, for the year, let me just sketch the global context, because as I indicated, to understand our own economy, we have to understand it in the global context and the global balance of forces. The first development to note is really that the world's, which still for a few years will be the world's leading economy, and the biggest economy is the United States economy. So obviously we export massively to the United States, especially our manufactured products, automotive products, BMWs, Mercedes-Benz, Toyotas, we export to the U.S. market. So the growth in the U.S. economy is key to our economy. And the very positive development, which is very new, because as you know, the global economy has been in a global recession for a number of years, but we see now increased growth in the U.S., and especially in what is called the regeneration of the United States manufacturing base, especially the shale gas revolution which has taken place. We also see recovery in China, which is the second biggest economy in the world. And then finally, I think we also start seeing growth still happening, and which has been our savior, is the continent. Africa is now one of the fastest growing, has some of the fastest growing economies globally. So we see, in a sense, so there's a modest recovery in the global marketplace, as it were. If we turn to domestically, we will note that growth has been volatile in the past few quarters, and especially in the first quarter. We suffered a contraction, and that is mainly the result of the 5 months long platinum strike. As you know, that platinum has replaced gold as our major mining commodity, and access has been, of course, it has massive impacts throughout the economy, impacts on manufacturing, So as I said, that is the court will be report. So we come not from a good place with regard to that. But if we look at overall, as I said, you can see the fluctuations in our growth on a quarterly basis. But what you can see is that except for now, this quarter, which is the first quarter, you can see some aberration because we have come out of the Great Recession, which is the 2008 global recession where we had major contraction of 6.3 and 2.7%. We did come out of that, but as you can see again now in the first quarter of this year, we have returned to a negative growth rate. But you will see overall the trend is positive. Growth, and I'll just take to the final slide, which really just puts the last quarter in perspective. What we are coming from, as I said, in 2008-2009, we lost almost 1 million jobs, and we had contraction, as you can see, of about 6% in our GDP. But since then, we have, since 2010, started recovering our unemployment, and is, as I said, a modest upward trend in terms of employment. And so in that sense, we do now have a solid base to move from, despite the contraction in the first quarter. Then with that background, and I think that's obviously referred to it, but we want to just look at the DDI's progress. And before going, it's important to link where does our annual plan comes from, and where does our 3-year plan comes from. The overarching program of government, and this is for the first time in the 20 years of democracy, we are starting this 5-year administration with a national development plan. So we have a big plan until 2030, which sets the framework for all our, and especially sets the work for government's 5-year medium-term strategic framework. So our plan is built on the NDP and then on the government's medium-term strategic framework. And then below it, you will see IPAP, which is our Industrial Policy Action Plan, which is a plan which is over 3 years, but it's renewed on an annual basis to take into account global dynamics, domestic circumstances. But our IPAP, our Industrial Policy Action Plan, is the central thrust of our DPI work program. And then from that, we develop our medium-term plan, and then our 1-year budget plan, so our expenditure framework. You will then see how the DDI fits into it. The 5-year plan is developed by the presidency, and from that, the DDI's plan is developed. So that's the coherence. Now, for the first time after 20 years, we now have some coherence across government and it leads to the national government. Plan. Firstly, is from government's 5-year plan, there's 21 interventions or priorities which has been allocated to our department for the 5-year plan and for this administration. You will sit reflected in our own plan, but just to highlight, and I won't mention all of them, but the first and most important one is that we will be expediting and we will proclaiming a minimum, and I stress minimum, of 3 special economic zones, and I'll come to that later. The other one is point 5, which is to highlight that we will also be developing that MBAP stands for Middle Beneficiation Action. As colleagues know, and honorable members know, we have been talking about middle, adding value to our middle for a long time. This, under this administration, we will be developing, we have been tasked by national government to develop an action plan similar to our industrial policy action plan to add minerals, and I'll come to that as well. And then the other one to highlight is point 7, which is there is a target of localization and procurement. The target that 75% of the billions of spent on government procurement, from uniforms for the police and the army to get linen for hospitals, to the buses for Rea Vaya and MyCity, we hope to achieve 75% of those products must be locally produced in South Africa. So we will be scaling that plan of achieving that 75% target. Under this part, to highlight in terms of the international arena, we plan to establish an export council just committed to exports on the African continent. Then the other big one is group 7, which is a tripartite free trade area. This, which we hope to conclude, we have been busy with it for about 10 years now, we hope to conclude it in about a year's time, but a tripartite free trade area. This is a trade agreement, a free trade area between SADC, Southern Africa Development Community, the East Africa Community, which is Kenya, Tanzania, Uganda, Rwanda, and then and COMESA, which goes right up to Egypt. So it is really an agreement which goes from Cape to Cairo. There's 26 African countries, a population of about 600 million. Now the reason for Africa's underdevelopment, or one of the reasons for Africa's underdevelopment, is unlike China, we are divided into 50 small economies. So while the continent is 1 billion people, that 1 billion is divided into 50 countries. And therefore, our markets are individually to support industrialized, because as you know, for industrialized you need big markets so that you can have economies of scale. So through this, we hope to then create a market of 600 million people. Then we will be, let's say, the size of the European Union, for example, will be double the size of the U.S. market, and so forth. So that's our key priority, develop this land, free trade area. Finally, under our 21 priority to highlight is we have to develop a supplier development center for procurement. As I indicated, we want to procure 75% of the goods and services must be locally produced, but we also want to ensure that there is those to black industries or PE enterprises. And for that, we need to ensure that we have a capability to supply these trucks and buses and locomotives. So we need a supply development program for that, and that is what we hope to do. And finally, as I said, to spread the growth, we hope to attract fund investment to every municipality. That is the 21 key interventions that the department is responsible as part of government's five-year plan that we have highlighted. If we then go into our own plan, which as I say is much more comprehensive and detailed and so on. As I indicated, one of the key issues is going to be special economic development, especially have an impact on the provinces. Now, last year or at the end of this last administration, Parliament and the NCOP finalized the special economic zones. We now have a proper piece of legislation to regulate the special or industrial economic zones. And if we look at it, we hope to have and are planning on 10 new special economic zones across all the provinces. Currently, as you know, we have Saldanha Bay, which was launched last year. Saldanha Bay, which is on the west coast here, close to Cape Town. We currently have already Kucha, and then we have this London IDZ, then we have Richards Bay, which is our functioning industrial development. So, to those ones, we are planning on adding another 10 zones. If we take it, then we will then cover all the provinces. And we will really try to spread industrial development to the country. Starting with Northern Cape, you will see there, there's quite active work already taking place, but we hope to start a solar corridor, a solar park, because of renewable energy and in the world, we get the best sunlight in that area, and there's already major investments in terms of producing solar power, so we hope to develop a massive zone there. In the Eastern Cape, we are looking at as you know, we've already got PE and London, but the old, the former homeland area, the Transkei area, Lucia and others, we are looking to develop a wild coast zone where we want to focus on agro-processing and tourism. So it's a new special economic zone we're working on in the Eastern Cape. We will also working on one in Harry Smith. We've already issued the initial notice for Harry Smith in the Free State. Then we are looking at the Northwest. We're looking at the platinum industry, we're looking at Limpopo in Dubatse, and Messina, and then in Mpumalanga as well. So, Honorable Chair, this will be, we'll be keeping the NCLP regularly updated about progress, but this is going to be one of our flagship programs, because as you can see, our industrial development has been focused in Gauteng, in Durban, and Western Cape, the main Western Cape area. So this is going to be part of the strategy to really spread and perhaps to have inclusive growth in this country. Just the further announcement is tomorrow we are launching a major truck plant in Kucha, and then we will also, Canada at his first meeting this year already, then proclaim the Dube trade port in KwaZulu-Natal, Kinshasa Airport. There we will be launching the special economic zone. It's already up and running, and we will be having a major international investor, the Samsung, establishing a plant there already. So this program is not one which is on the drawing board. It is one which is moving as we speak. It is gaining traction. In turn to some of the other programs, we will continue our skills development work in the industrial area, and one of our big initiatives to sort of bring back the industrialization is our tool making program, which we will continue apprenticeship program. And then at the bottom there is what we call EMIA, which is our export marketing and investment assistance program. We hope to assist just under 1,000 enterprises. This is where we take small companies or medium companies who want to break into the export market, and then we assist them with traveling abroad, doing market research, and then also taking their goods with them to be able to display the products overseas, and really part of our export marketing program. This is our incentives. You will see when I take you through the budget that the bulk of the GDI budget, over 60% of the total actually, goes straight to the private sector. You will see that we've got, these are our main programs. The first one is our automotive incentive program, which we will roll out, and there we hope to help 25 companies. Our other program is the business processing services. This is what is generally called call centers, but this is also one of the very successful programs where we have attracted all the major BPOs, call centers, Amazon, and all the major producers have already established in South Africa. That we will continue. Then the other incentive we will roll out to 70 is the film and television. We will know that over the past 15 years we have really created a substantial film industry in the country, we will continue that program. The 12I is a tax incentive scheme, which we will continue to roll out. Critical infrastructure, and then one of our biggest programs is now the MCEP, the Manufacturing Competitive Technology Program. In total, then, you will see that we will be supporting and sustaining it's about 100,000 jobs. We will be leveraging about 20 billion rand of incentives, and we will be out about 450 enterprises, and that's for the one financial year. As I indicated, the bulk of these programs is straight support in the private sector. So sometimes people artificially try to get a divide between government and business, or between sort of public and private sector. There's a smooth transition. We are trying to create a dynamic, globally competitive private sector in this country. And as you can see, all our incentive doesn't go to other government departments. It goes straight to the private sector to employ people, to produce locally, and also hopefully to export. Looking then, turning to our broader international arena, we hope to, as I indicated, conclude this grand free trade area. That will be the core focus of our work on the continent. But then we also continue our work in terms of the SADC region, which is still our biggest market on the continent. And then, as you know, we are SACU. We're in SADC. Our neighbors, Lesotho, Swaziland, and Namibia, Botswana, we will continue to work on that. with regard to investment facilitation, which is our other key part, which is attracting foreign direct investment in the economy. We have a target of 40 billion. We are turning the corner on FDI, and in 2013 we had one of our largest FDIs ever attracted, about over 80 million rand was attracted. But that's our target. Then on the broadening participation, as I indicated, we want to build an inclusive economy with the participation of all South Africans. So we will be, the Broad-Based VE Act was revised by the National Assembly and NCOP, and we hope to operationalize. One of the key features of the new Black Economic Empowerment Act is the establishment of a VE Commission, which will champion and monitor Black Economic Empowerment. That will be established. And then the other successful program we will continue and roll out another 93 incubators is what we call an incubator support program. This incubator support program we run in conjunction with the private sector on a 50-50 basis sometimes. But this is where we allow companies, we give them space to locate, we give them access to equipment and machinery, mentorship, supply chain, market support, and so on. But this is through an incubator support program. So we see this as a key tool in terms of helping, especially small businesses, and this program we will roll out. The other major program we've introduced is what we call aquaculture development program. This is what can colloquially call fish farming, and it is the major source of protein out globally, and aquaculture development program we will be assisting these in a number of enterprises. As I indicated, 60% of DCI's budget goes to incentives to the private sector. We hope to create a better geographic spread of these incentives. As I said, traditionally, because of the structure of our economy, most of those incentives then goes to the three metropoles, Johannesburg, Durban, and Cape Town. We hope then to have a better spread of incentives across the provinces, especially through the special economic zones, that will help to do that out. If I then turn to the other aspect of the department, which is the regulation, and here the National Council of Provinces is a major player in this area, especially because provinces have, let's say, concurrent jurisdiction in this area of liquor and gambling. We will be doing lots of work around developing laws and standards for liquor and gambling. In terms of legislation, we hope to, through this year, have six bills introduced. The first one is on its way, which is the Promotion and Protection of Investment Act. On that one, as you know, we had bilateral investment treaties with a number of countries. These bilateral investment treaties were not well or not suitable for us. We are going to have now one overarching piece of legislation which covers all investors and gives them protection. And we will have copyright, and we will amend the Gambling Act. So these are the legislation we hope to be introducing in this year. Then these are some of the regulations we will be introducing. As I said, a big focus will be on liquor and gambling especially, and then on the social economic zones. Let me then finally turn, as we get to a conclusion, to the administration of the department. As we know, budgeting all our programs must be efficient and effective public service. Firstly, we hope to continue our trend. We have managed over the past 5 years bring down our vacancy rate from double digits to under 10%. And we currently have about 1,500 employees in the department. We have to reduce our vacancy rate from 9.4 to 6%. We then obviously want to retain staff and have a reduce our turnover rate. In terms of our targets, we are on both the employment of women in senior management and people with disability. We hope to expand our targets, but on both targets, we are making progress. And in the final one on the administration, is really this issue of credit payments. As you know, small businesses rely on government paying in time. And as a department that used to be responsible for small business, we have been championing the government must pay a small business within 30 days. So we are one of the best performing departments in this area, and our department we have brought about to most of the payments are done in 15 days. And we are also running workshops across government in helping all our departments to reach this target. As you know, we will be also, part of our work is to gain public awareness around many of our numerous incentive schemes, and just to lay out the details of our communication strategy. We will be launching, we used to have a DCI to the people program, where we really took small business incentives to our SMEs, but now with the establishment of a small business ministry, a dedicated department, we will be handing over that to that department. But we will be keeping our campaign going, our system in Song Care campaign, but working with industry now, we will be really taking DCI to factories as well. And these are some of the programs we will be designing. We will also put big emphasis on our service delivery improvement plan, because we know that the focus of this administration is really going to be on delivery. If I turn to our budget, you'll see then our MTM, which is our three-year budget framework. Currently we have a budget of just slightly over 9 billion rand. In the following year we hope to increase that by about 1 billion rand and again by about 1 billion rand over the following year. The key part of the increases will be for our special economic zones. You will see that is our biggest budget, and that, as I said, is linked to those 10 special economic zones that we are working on, and that is amounts for our budget. As I indicated, if you look at our budget by a breakdown, you will see the bulk of it goes to incentives and to the private sector. You will see, for example, the incentive development and administration program is 5.5 billion. But in addition to that, we have under gastro development, we have incentives, and under the broadening participation, we have incentives. And if you take that together, there is about 7 billion of the 9 billion goes to incentives, and another billion goes to our 15 agencies that fall under the department, agencies like the companies and registration office, the consumer commission, South African Bureau of Standards, and so on. But we also support 15 agencies under this, under our budget. If I can then turn to bringing this presentation to conclusion, Honourable Chair, by then just focusing what we can take from this presentation. The first, which was outlined in the SONA by our president, is that our biggest constraint now to industrial development is our electricity. The shortage of electricity, and that is the biggest, if we overcome that constraint, we can really accelerate our industrialization. The second issue which we will be working on is what is called the exchange rate volatility. As I said, as a small open economy, we are really influenced by what happens in the United States, and our currency fluctuates wildly. But the biggest concern is when our currency strengthens, then we make our exports uncompetitive and we attract lots of imports into our economy, thus destroying jobs. So we want to stabilize. It's not that we want a very weak exchange rate, but we want a stable exchange rate so that companies can plan properly. Then we hope to, as I indicated, we hope to continue this trend of attracting FDI. As I indicated, we have turned the corner. We have attracted major investments from Procter & Gamble, Unilever, Hisense, into our economy. We doubled in 2013 our investment to $8 billion. That's roughly about 80 billion rand that we've attracted into the economy. So again, the sort of the negative narrative that always saying we are failing economy, people are running away from the economy, the exact opposite is happening. And as I said, we will tomorrow be launching first automotive works, 600 million investment in Kuka. We will be developing trucks in this country. We will be manufacturing now medium-sized vehicles by China's largest manufacturer. And it's not that they're promising to invest. They started production on the 1st of July. So we're opening the plant. We are, in a sense, only symbolically opening the plant. The plant is already open up and running. And as I said, in a few weeks' time, we will be launching Samsung plant. As you know, Samsung is now the world's biggest company. They will be start making electronic equipment, and soon they will be start making tablets for the continent, manufactured in KwaZulu-Natal. So our FDI story, we will continue, and that positive trend of FDI. As I indicated again, our automotive sector, we have turned around the sector from as it was 10, 15 years ago, now have attracted 8 billion rand of investment. As I indicated, we now, the Mercedes-Benz plant where we produce for the global, we produce the C-Class Mercedes-Benz, we do the BMW D-Series, we do the Toyota Quest, we do Volkswagen, so that is all the investment that we attracted into our automotive sector already. So we want to continue our industrial policy work. And finally, we need to take advantage of our geographical location, which is being on the continent, and to really industrialize South Africa, industrialize Africa, and expand our value add of exports to the continent. Honorable Chair, I'll just conclude very quickly by, as we know, we will be, the department will be, there will be a radical change to our department because of the development of a small business ministry. And I'll just briefly look at some of the functions that will be transferred to the new department. The key issues that we will be handing over is firstly our CEDA, which is our Small Enterprise Development Agency and the technology program. These are the programs we will be handing over, but we did substantial work in this area as a department, and that will be going over to the new small department. Then also cooperatives, this can be a prime area of DTI's work. The entire work around cooperatives, including the cooperative incentive scheme and the development of a cooperative development agency, will now be transferred to that department. Also, the other sector we worked on was the informal sector and township businesses, which we developed a program, the National Informal Sector Strategy. That program will also be handed over, and also our youth and gender and women's empowerment programs will be transferred. So I won't go to, as I said, these programs, but we already have budget for it. We already have plans and programs for these areas, so it will be handed over legally, holus bolus, or lock, stock and barrel to the new department and ministry. Honorable Chair, that brings our program to a conclusion. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, DG and your team. Honorable members, we appreciate the presentation, but the reason why it was presented for us to us was not for appreciation. It was so that we could engage. We now have the opportunity to do so. Are you next? And then Honorable McQuinn. And Honorable Ten. Let's take the call We ideally want to give every honourable member an opportunity to engage. Don't fear that because others have engaged that you can't. We have agreement, honourable members. I hope that with our colleagues at the GTR they'll go into it as well, that we plan to finish at 39. Honourable Sudan.
Thank you, Chairperson. I must appreciate this presentation. It's informative. It's informative and also it does assist our constituents because we are not pleased with provinces. Because after this presentation, surely, Chairperson, I would think that the committee will have to go and see what is on the document is really taking place on the ground. It's just that I will be missing that opportunity for the launch of the track in Kuha tomorrow. I would wish that we would have been invited so that we can see and bear witness to that. And also so that you see, when government launches a project, it should not prove like that it must carry on big along our constituency. So that our hotels can own up on what we're doing. Now, the big gun will be there by the communities. We must own up and bear testimony to what government is doing. We will not be there. You know? I'm not saying because I'm not there, but I come from PE, I'm sitting here, there's a launch, we don't know. I'm hearing it for first time. So I'm saying maybe in future going forward, we'll improve on that. So that when, because Kuha is an apex, the key strategic position of that region. Otherwise, thank you very much for that. You can always report to our province about the matter. Certain the big plans of the department are also welcomed. I'm just wondering whether does the department have the real capacity to take through some capacity and also in monitoring those big projects so that they don't falter, they don't fall into cracks. At the end of the day, do we have capacity, the real capacity, so that when the AG makes his comments or her comments on the outcomes in terms of the spending patterns, he does not find serious shuffles either under expenditure or over and so on, and also in the coordination of our project. I just want to check on that officially. But I can see on your page 4, in fact, you refer to a developmental state, and South Africa is a developmental state, I agree. And you need to promote professionalism, ethical and dynamic, and so on. That's why I'm asking this question to Papa, so that they can work on that report 5 that you are having. These guys are quite big. We are learning and we are taking a lead from big countries, Brazil countries, like America, you refer to China also. And I'm looking at my province, it's more biased to urban, the metro PE. You know, the Eastern Cape is a very interesting setup of a province. It's quite urban and rural. And 60% of it is that size, you know, rural population. Can I get some information around the transfer area? It's more rural, no industry, and you are saying a country to succeed, it needs to industrialize. Now, any big major products for that area to revitalize its economy so that they become competitive with the world, including those the industries. In Sitka, you've got those factories that are there, closed down. And big old plans for those areas where we had used to have and they are closed. I know it goes with other factors, you know, immigration and workers and so on. But are there any plans for those kind of things so that you become radical in your approach as the president has announced? Let us stop there. Otherwise, I would want to ask a few questions more face by face. Thank you,
thank you very much. Honourable Vada.
Thank you, Chair. I think the person can be seeking, perhaps a second round, can they come in? But appreciation is not as well. First, on page 35, where we talk about the budget, we made this budget with the SD debt that we spoke about and how that how it pans out for that one. Secondly, you spoke about Komati Good, but you didn't give me a little bit more detail. If you're within my constituency, you could tell me something about that. Then, you mentioned the Aqua Agriculture Program. Just a little bit more on that one. Also, you mentioned the importance of electricity and where does it feature in your assistance with the private sector. I'm thinking especially of Hotel Dengue and the smaller companies that are coming up and bringing to the table solar energy products and so on. And then finally, I like the idea of improving the payments to small business, particularly you said that you are relating with engaging other departments, but especially from my personal experience with the Department of Social Welfare as well as the Department of Health, if you can give us some idea of how you're engaging these departments. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Honorable Mokwena?
I noticed in your presentation that you mentioned economic development as one of your key focuses. So I'm just wondering if, you know, if there's a need for a target economy or something like that. But that's not my question. You mentioned under economic development that in the Free State in one of the SEZs, that harassment had been identified as you call it something? Yes. The Free State is sitting at about 41% of unemployment, which is a huge concern. And the reason I raised the economic development issue earlier on is because yesterday I raised the same issue, which is that we have places like Welcome, for instance, which were rich in minerals, in gold, and so on. So, you know, and we're running out of those mines. And people are remaining unemployed. And we haven't diversified economies. We haven't found creative ways of creating other jobs. And there's still huge potential in those places. So my wonder is, what is, you have identified these areas where we could diversify. Just next to Harrison's, for instance, there's Qualcomm, which used to be heavily active in manufacturing. This is pre-1994. And that industry has died completely since 1994. What are we doing to revitalize that sort of activity? That's one part of my question. Then, just in terms of SACU, there's an interesting relationship that is happening, especially between the Sultan and Malawi government and SACU. Around people, which is that, and I'm not sure if it's a political issue, but we seem to be distancing ourselves more and more from a business perspective, but also from the political. The borders have become very difficult to access, especially for the Sotho. We're increasingly treating the Sotho as a foreign and distant alien country than we should be. And I'm just wondering what you mean then when you say that we're strengthening these relations. Especially, you know, my biggest concern is from a business perspective and labor perspective. Especially because the Sotho is in close proximity to the Free State, and there's, you know, there's synergies there that we could export, especially in tourism. Yes, that's my second question. Sorry, Chair, I'm taking too long.
No problem. No
yeah.
problem.
My third question is in regards to $1.9 billion that you've allocated to the film and television industry. Is this in incentives or is this money cash going into the industry? The reason why I'm asking is because the incentives that we have put in place for the industry are incongruent with the outputs, our internal outputs in terms of television and film, in the sense that we seem to be putting more money into international film. We seem to be incentivizing them. We seem to be making it easier for them. And through IDC, NFVF, there's not enough money going into local productions. And so we're not reaching out to the international markets. We seem to be inviting them, and this is creating a lot of, it's creating what is termed jobs, in that they don't last. We don't create a sustainable industry, so to speak. More money into local television. Let's use those international relations to create a market outside, so that we have a bigger market, so that we can create a more sustainable industry here. That's one part of that question. And then the second question, and this is purely for my own purpose, because I also sit in the Arts and Culture Committee, is the fact that I noticed that you didn't have on your table there, you didn't know the potential jobs that the $1.9 billion is going to create. And I'm just wondering why that is. Is it because of lack of statistics? It's purely my own purpose, but I need to, yeah. Thanks, Chair.
You're welcome. Can we have Honorable Tede as the last contributor in this, then we get the response and then take another. This is the follow-up. Can I take you in the next one?
Thank you, Chair. This is one of the hard-working ministers, and probably we'll start with the clarity situations. But you were not explicit as to what are the five investors that this brings going to do. Are they going to be tapping into the economic activities already in the district, or are they going to seek to diversify the economic activities that are in the district? The second issue that I wanted to raise is, what is the modern day, or what is the form that we want to see Northern Cape take away from the traditional way of productions of material in this case, and when they are exhausted, they have benefited housing. Productions of material in Northwest processed and refined in housing. I'm reading this in appreciation of the drive that I know that you are very passionate as the minister about issues of localization, issues of beneficiation. What form do we want to see take? The 75% localization. Are we going to see the second layer of moving away from the production of uniforms and buses to hardcore production of minerals and agricultural process? I'm happy that you spoke about agro logistics. There's a drive now to move into serious agrarian reforms. And you have silos in Northwest, in Free State, in Boomerang, and in Empty. What is it that you have to, what form are we seeking to take in making sure that we do that. Without necessarily, I know that it was done very well, but I think that time we move from productions of uniforms and smaller to bigger issues. And this is covered now with the decent jobs that we want to create, decent employment. What is the modern day FGI seeking for achieve? I'm raising this because your traditional FGI was talking about one thing that I still want to know whether is FGI still coming with an element of huge infrastructural development, away from labor flexibility issues, from issues that are making negative money. And I'm happy that here we are now good news in terms of the FGI. But are we taking into consideration the key pillars of what we seek to achieve as this government? Creating decent jobs, stimulating infrastructural development that is going to be coupling what we want to achieve. And huge, not just one, two there, but going massively. And I think the other issues, when you have clarified, I will be more clear actually. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much, Honorable Ntebe. I just wanted to say, coming from Johannesburg, in Harvard, that I understand where you come from. Please, could we get a response?
Thank you, Honorable Chair. As you know, for this committee, I leave all difficult questions to my colleagues. I just answer the easy ones. So, understanding. If I can just cover some of the thanks for the inputs, it was very useful and insightful. Honorable Suka, I think we will get a system going about informing honorable members and members of parliament about all activities of the department. So I think we'd like to distribute that. Or special economic zones, different events where we're launching things and so on, international trips, will be all those things that I think we will establish. On your question with regard to us developing the administrative capacity and governance, and especially our budget and so on, I think we have now been able to, over the past 5 years at least, reduce our under expenditure to initially we brought it to under 5%, but now it's coming to under 1% of so we are in a sense spending a full budget, and in many areas now, like in our incentives, we are exceeding our budget, and we are now requesting more and more budget because we are spending finally, on your question, I think it's a very important one, which covers a number of other members as well, which is the question about what are we going to do about the declining old industrial areas, especially in the former homeland areas of Kwakwa, Saskai, and so on. Specifically with regard to the Eastern Cape, some of our initiatives, as I said, our first big initiative is going to be to develop the Wild Coast area, and to develop that into a special economic zone. And that is quite a vast area, mainly rural, Oliver Tambo area, and that Port St. John's area. So massive for tourist potential and for agricultural potential, agro-processing. So we are looking at that. Honorable member, what we do need help with is really we need young people and managers to start locating these areas. Because, as you know, the biggest thing to run a special economic zone is you need boots on ground. You need skilled engineers, you need development planners to start, like we have been able to attract people into Kuha development zone, but we need management to start moving into these areas if we are going to develop them and make them parts of economic activities. And then, then we are looking at, in terms of the Mtata, we have a plan going to develop that industrial area of Mtata and to develop a revitalized industrial park. And then under our program, we are trying to revive the old Jimbaza area, and poor Butterworth area. We are looking at revitalizing those industrial areas. We will be having three sets of activities. As I said, the one is the incubator, which is at the small level. Then at the medium level, we want to re-establish industrial parks, industrial areas. But we want to do it in new areas, like old areas, but also in, if we take areas like the Western Cape, the Mutual Spring area, we look at Alvarado Park, we look at Kailicha, we look at also having just in, revitalizing the industrial zones as well. So that is the other program we will be developing. Honorable Avalda, yes, especially with regards to the specific park zones, we currently, out of that budget, the, well, what we have here is, if we take our budget, we have only the first, out of that 5.5 billion, which we have incentives, out of that, for the current year, we have 600 million allocated for all 10 IDZs, for our existing ones and our special economic zones. That will increase by roughly just under a billion the following year and then another billion the following year. So what we, as I said, because we want to, we would like to run both existing 3-4 IDZs, 4 IDZs, and add another 10. Even the 600 million is insufficient for our needs. So we are basically approaching national decision for increase on that 600 million and then on the 1.8 billion the following year. But most of our detail with regards to that is on the special economic zones and so on. With regards to the Kumasi Port and those projects that I've outlined in those zones, the first thing doing all of them, our first plan always with the industrial development zone is to first put in place a project team to start looking at a special economic zone. So the department then half the province. We leave it up to the province and the municipality to try to identify people to start working on the zone. But we assist in interviewing, developing the job specification and then funding the initial posts and so on. And then we allocate money for a feasibility study. Because obviously you want to know exactly what is your competitive advantage, what sectors you're going to focus on. Because we want these industrial development zones to areas of manufacturing activity for the next 20, 30 years. So it must be viable. So therefore, intense work on doing proper planning is key, and that's why. So all of these areas now are at the stage of, most of them, they are at the stage of, we've commenced the feasibility studies. That is where, and as I said, we will work out with this committee is to provide regular updates to you on the progress of these studies. And as I said, I mean, you could also play a monitoring role, because as you say, we don't want it just to be on PowerPoint presentations, it must be on the ground, and we can then fill it around. But as I said, in Kumasi Port, as you know, that area is rich in both tourism and also in agriculture, adding value to our agricultural products.
Sorry, Richard. Are you therefore saying that on this SEZ, it's going to be helpful if it is evolved from a local level, but also then located within the plans of a provincial legislature?
Yes, absolutely.
And they like their lives with you?
Yes.
With DTI?
Yes, precisely. What we want is a three-way partnership in every special economic zone. We want the municipality, because that is the area where physically the incident is located. So, for example, in the Northern Cape, what we've got Upington Municipality being the core, and we've actually asked them, please give us a project manager to start this project. And of course you need the province to take ownership of the issue jointly with the province. At the national level, we will be overall responsible for, let's say, catalyzing these 15 special economic zones. That will be run and managed by the province, so it will be key part of their strategy and their plan, and then the municipality itself will be then partnership. So your eyes will be. Honorable Valga, with regards to the electricity, as we indicated, the big part is our solar energy and wind energy that we bring on to it. But also what we do have is we've got a led by gas here. We basically have, as you know, what happens is in many areas there's just the outages and you have massive disruptions in production. We are working, we have a team that goes and visits these municipalities to try to solve these problems as it happens and try to solve the problems in the medium basin. So we've been out to quite a few areas and get caught and maybe speak to that. But our energy, as I said, is really, we have plants, international investors, electricity outages a year with regard to getting production or utilities. So we have to work on the immediate, while we look at the short, medium-term problem of bringing on stream more electricity. Honorable Mkwena, yes, with regard to Harrismith area, as we've done, we're quite far advanced there. And just 2 weeks ago, the minister published for comment the development of that Harrismith zone. So because of the old, I think the development corporation there, they've done some initial work, so we hope to accelerate that one. That one will again be, agro-processing will be big, but also will be a major logistic hub for that. I take your point that you're right, the unemployment rate is 41%, is way above the national average. And I think again the same thing will apply, as I said, we don't have the detailed plan yet, but we must have a regional team to look at the Papa area, look at the old Bosabalo, Tabashu areas, which used to be former industrial areas, to revitalize that as part of our plan. And I take your point on the question of Valcom and those towns, as you heard in the state of the national address, there's going to be a massive focus on mining areas because they should not be in the state they are in. With our mineral wealth, these should be thriving towns. But what happens is, as you say, the money just needs, unlike in the other part of the world, take Australia and so on. So definitely I think it's to really look at developing diversified economies within these mining towns in terms of the mining. With regard to Saku, I think the issue, I mean, I think you might just a comment about that, about the relationship with the city. But what we're trying to do is, as you know, historically, the relationship has really just been one of dependency, where the only role of the South African Customs Union has been for South Africa to distribute revenue to the budget of the Sutu Swaziland and Botswana. And what happens is, what happens to this money, whether the money is spent on luxury items or whether it's spent on industrial development, it has never been asked. What we are trying to do is to create a proper common industrial area where we're saying that the revenue that's collected under the customs is going to infrastructure, is going to industrial development, so that we create, in a sense, a viable Southern Africa SACU area. So I think it's more about how do we change the nature of the relationship with them. But I agree with you fully that it can't be, I mean, the basis, as I said, our economies and our people are so interlinked. It's really one economy, one people. So I don't think that these can be separate areas. It should be really a common market, as it were. And we must move away from removing, we should have free movement of labor and capital across, especially SACU. I mean, we're trying to do it across the SADC area and so on, but definitely. But as I said, it must be based on dependency and on just transfer of revenue into government prices across the country. I think we must develop our coal industry. I think sometimes we need to draw a false dichotomy between international, the key point to me is that we must develop the local capability to produce both international blockbusters and South African blockbusters. So whether it's Nelson Mandela, which was fully made by South Africans, and so on. But as I said, so it's not a question of foreign or local, it's a question of we must make it here and we must develop the skill. But so I think we are now over the past few years developed the capability. And we have all the capability of making animated movies to international movies, Hollywood movies to local productions, and I think it's ready to expand the whole sector. But you're right, but we need to bring more black filmmakers into this, that's part of the program. So it's supposed to promote both local and international reports.
So it would also be to create a market outside, and so that the money is coming back to the country.
Yes, but as you can see, definitely, that is the overall objective. For us to make films of international quality, as we can see now, for example, with Nelson Mandela movie, Long Walk to Freedom, we now have an agreement with China. It's already shown in all the cinemas in France. It is going to China. Once we crack that market, once we crack the Indian market, and there's a big program, we will, in a sense, bring all that money back to South Africa. But at night, that is what we must move towards, and not just be a sort of a subcontractor to the global, to Hollywood. I think that from my side, and then finally on the SEDs and Honorable David, I think you've raised the issue that I agree with you about the Northern Canada need to diversify. The importance of agriculture, as we know, what was laid out in SONA is that there's a target of 1 million new jobs in the agricultural sector. We have, based on the IPAP, the agricultural department will be developing the APAP, which is the Agricultural Policy Action Plan, which is developed to revitalize our agriculture and agro-processing sector. And then finally, the way we conceptualize the special economic zones and decent work, and we don't want to deregulate the labor market, but as you know, in many countries they experimented with this thing called EPZ, export processing zones. You did away with labor laws, and you basically tried to attack labor. That has never worked anywhere in the world. So in our special economic zones, we give you better incentives, we give you a lower tax rate, we give you cheaper land, we give you those things, but we don't allow for any exploitation of labor, we don't allow for any labor deregulation. But also, that is very important, because I think the reason for the underperformance of our economy is because it's been a low-wage economy. Because of low wages, people can't consume, and that means we have low aggregate income, low domestic demand, which means nobody to buy our products, so we have to export everything to the rest of the world, because nobody in our local economy can buy. So the living wage and raising the wage level, like in Brazil, like you see in Germany now, they just introduced or a minimum wage of 850 euro, and as I said, Germany is at full employment. And the reason they can have full employment is because they pay their people, so that people can buy cars, televisions, everything, because they have their income. So I think that's why in our industrial zones, we really not have for any deregulation. And play football, unfortunately, they score too many goals. I think is depleting us now. Okay, finally, Honorable Chair, just because we didn't mention the dogs under the phone, because I think as was mentioned by Honorable Members, that those jobs are difficult to, because it's short-term nature. You make the movie, you bring in skills, and then they work for the next movie and so on. So we haven't quantified, but what we have quantified is that the amount of investment we hope to attract is 1.9 million into our economy. The way that incentive works is we give a cash grant of about 30%. If a company agrees to do the production in South Africa, all that we then give them, on condition they produce it here, then we give them a maximum of 30% of that as a grant, a non-repayable grant for making that production.
Thank you very much.
There's just got a
Please, sir.
Next, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members, just a couple
of additions to the DG. The Honorable Member asked a question about capacity. There is obvious capacity, but we're mindful of weaknesses, and we consider ourselves as a learning department, and we must learn by doing. But under the DG of our GSSD, our support services, we run very significant programs. And just to mention some, we have a training program as this, which is a certificate of honors and master's program in economic development and industrial policy. We run a globally best practice program called the African Program on Rethinking Development Economics. As we speak, we're actually training people at the University of Pretoria on economic data analysis and so on and so forth. And perhaps we can provide the committee with some details of all the capacity building that we do. With respect to issues of globalization, I suppose it might be useful, Honourable Chair, some of what you consider us doing a bit of a detailed briefing to you. The localization has got a number of legs. One of those would be the designation of sectors and products for local procurement. And we've done 14 designations, and we've got a whole pipeline of additional designations. Then the big ticket industrial supplier development falls under a program called the Competitive Supply Development Program, which is rolled out through Transnet and Eskom mainly, in big rail procurement and electricity procurement and supply development with strong black economic empowerment and transformation policy objectives as well. But it might be useful to draw the attention of members to clause 9.3 of the Triple PFA, which allows all provinces, all metros, all state procurements to design tenders with strong localization components. In effect, what we're picking up is that we need to really strengthen the state's capacity to secure compliance with localization so that we don't just indicate a commitment, but that it actually finds expression in concrete localization, including at provincial and metro levels where it is perhaps a lack of compliance. So the critical questions would be to build compliance for local procurement, to build strategic sourcing capacity, including in provinces, to do localization and supply development, and then of course obviously alignment with the policy objectives. On the electricity, and in brief, it's not just about the fact that there is security of supply problems and sharply escalating prices from electricity supplied by Eskom, but perhaps a more critical problem, as the Director General has set out, is the fact that in municipalities there is shutdowns of both electricity and water supply. And as you would appreciate, for example, if you're running a plastic extrusion company and halfway through melting your plastic, there's an electricity shutdown and the plastic dries in the molds, it's got to be cleaned out, it's massively costly. So at a municipal level, the issue of electricity shutdowns and more importantly, sometimes triple-digit increases in electricity when municipalities try and recover costs but add premiums to the prices and they load those premiums onto manufacturing companies, that's a very, very significant problem. And we must be careful not to, in fact, have a perverse effect where companies that are based in ex-rural town in fact move to an urban area because there's so many electricity shutdowns and anomalies confronting this in relation to electricity, that you have an emphasis to increase urbanization. And so that's the thing that I think we really need to keep an eye on and work together to try and solve, as the Director General has said. And then the, I think it would be useful to Honourable Amanda's to begin to get to groups with the Industrial Policy Action Plan and its various iterations. And I say this in the context of the fact that in the 2014 IPAP, for the first time there, I set up key action plan around beneficiation. These will be ramped up steadily in successive iterations of the Industrial Policy Action Plan. And beneficiation is, if I may say, it's not only about adding value, so that you're not simply exporting dirt out of the ground, and as the Honourable colleague has said, 20 years down the road you've got a hole in the ground and economic activity stops. You want to add value to mineral resources, but it's also about ensuring that because of our huge mineral endowment and all these reserves of strategic minerals, that these are made available as a competitive advantage to downstream manufacturing, so that in value addition in steel and plastics and manganese or whatever the mineral is, that our manufacturing sector benefits, because that's where we can have labor-intensive industrial activity with very significant economic multipliers into the rest of the economy. So just a few additions to the teaching.
Thank you. Judith?
Thank you, Chair. Just to respond to the Honourable Member about the M&E capacity, I think Professor Stephen can also talk to that, but on two very important fronts, we conduct this regulatory impact assessment on all our legislation that's planned for and in the pipeline. And then internally, we have a M&E unit within the Incentive Administration division. But we also participate in the multi-year evaluation program that's done from the presidency. So we've identified a number of programs. But I think that's on the formal side. And also part of the functions we do is ongoing monitoring of the work on the project. Thank you.
In essence, we say M&E evaluation and monitoring.
That's correct. We are ready to take a second round, but I thought it might be important at this stage to just remind ourselves, Honourable Members, that this opportunity that we have here is in preparation for the presentation of this department's budget in the NCOP, which is going to happen on the 23rd of July. That's around the corner at 1400 hours. So as we engage in these deliberations here, let us also be mindful that if there's anything that could help us so that we are able to present this confidently in the NCOP, that we have that clear. I notice, are you ready for the next round of questions? Okay. We have four hands. Okay. We're going to allow seven hands. Okay. Honourable eight hands in 2 minutes. We're going to have you first, and then we're going to go to KZN. And no, it's Limpopo. Comrade Hale. You'll be the first one from Limpopo. Then we're going to go to Honourable Lord. I noticed yesterday that you were back to say something. So we're going to allow you before we allow Honourable Van Lennep. Okay. Let's have that fall and then see where we are. I know Honourable Suka has another committee at 12:15, so he will excuse himself before then. I'm not sure.
No,
do you want to then raise your question, because you were the first one, and I'm trying to be fair. So we'll receive the four. If you're still here, we'll receive your questions.
Yeah.
Reverend Timonia.
No, change the name, I got her, but like the response is but one last, one point that is of my way of addressing. If present future, we could have the light of who on the other CDI group member to NCC as what the two is.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Let me join those who did appreciate the presentation and continue to say from where I come from, Limpopo Province, the DTI has been the only department that maybe if I was to support, I was supposed to give them the mark, I would give them 100 over 100%. The way they were trying to fund the project and trying to uplift the lives of those who were not getting. And I would want to continue to say their initiatives are very good and we welcome them. But then now my worry is when it comes to the monitoring and evaluation. I've heard Mama say they do have it, but I did not see it. The project or the cooperatives will then receive funds, but then when it comes to training on how to take care of the project, I did not see it. And again, I did not see any monitoring. And you ended up seeing that the whole lot of money then now is like they've been rendered useless, because the cooperatives are now losing the meaning. And I also heard that you lost 1 million jobs, but I did not know as to how you did lose the job. Maybe if you can try and help us on those. And the other thing, in the presentation you were saying you're finalizing the implementation of youth enterprise development strategy. On this one I agree that you see Limpopo province is one of the disadvantaged province. Even if the size we have minerals, but we don't have the seas, you see. And if maybe we were able to start one, Honorable Chairperson, I would say let's go and try and prepare a sea in Limpopo,
yeah.
So that our people can then work. But then, that is a godly nature, we cannot do it. But then, I would request that the department, that with this type of project, whereby it can be able for the department to then help the people to get the jobs, then I would say, please, let's go and start in Limpopo, so that at least they also see themselves as part of those who are advantaged in our country. And the other thing, if the department can be able to fund the cooperatives, why don't we have a group of the people who will be trained in that very same town or province to monitor the project that the department will fund? I think that will take us far. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. The first question, and I can probably do the research on this myself, but I hope you can help me find it a bit quicker. You say the target is to increase localization to 75%. What is the norm? And then, if the norm is also around 75%, why don't we just push it up a little higher? Where are we at the moment? Because, I mean, if we can keep it internally, that should also help with job creation. In page 16, I think one of the other colleagues touched on that, the investors for district municipality. I'm sure you will give more details at a later stage, or if you can give it now, you'll appreciate it, of who you are targeting and in what districts and what is the fund frame around that, so that we can also just follow it up in our own areas. I'm glad the colleague from the Free State has on the film and television industry, because we need to make sure we get our internal market ready, but also the external market needs to be encouraged. And with the regulation, immigration regulation that's now putting a wrapper on all of this, I mean, this needs to be addressed. And from your department to also then put pressure on your colleagues in the other department that's actually handling the growth in that market. And then, I just want to get to my pages. Yeah, so the contact person or people to help and identify that qualifying companies, because I mean, we know our companies in our local constituency, so just give us the information so that we can then go back and help identify that. I mean, it's just to say the included participation of all provinces that DDI intends to request that Honourable Members identify a qualifying company within their constituencies that can apply for funding. So we just need more details around that so we can actually go and assist you with that and hopefully bring to the various areas. And then also follow up on the fish farming, I mean, just details of when the time frames. The Honourable Member from the POPA, you don't have a sea, but you still got a matted river, and now she's here. Other ways of aquaculture farming. And then just, I want to commend, there's one last, the 56 established incubators, are they all fully operational? And if they're not, to what extent are they? Because it's all good and well to say there's 46 established incubators, but to what extent are they functioning at the moment? With some of them 2, 3, 4 months ago, they're not really up to speed yet. So, and if they are not all yet operational, by when will they be? And I want to commend you on the payments to small business, but also I assume having had this small business functionality under your scope, you should know what departments are falling behind and which ones are also paying the way they should be. So can you provide us with follow-up so that we can also get our colleagues in the other committees to hold those departments accountable?
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Yeah, there are numbers of actors. I also go to a meeting between 1 and 2, and it's not a lunch meeting or a lunch date. It's a provincial delegation meeting.
We're going to try and finish up this stuff.
I want to say this is, like Honourable Dikhali, this is definitely our most favourite partner to work with. And we appreciate all the support that we've had from all the members in this department over the years. My concern is that you say we've doubled foreign direct investment, FDI, in the last couple of years. And the current trend is that the economists are a bit skeptical about our growth. And I think sometimes although you try so hard to achieve what has to be achieved, we've got a couple of own goal scorers in and I must be very careful how I phrase this, in politics I would rather say. Now, very often the blame gets shifted and we're not getting to the nitty-gritty of the blame. For instance, the currency, it says our currency is volatile. You raised the issue of energy, and I want to come back to energy. Transport, and then labor, and when we talk about labor, I want to talk about the labor costs versus industrialized automation, because industrialization comes with a large amount of automation, and it has been in the papers in the last week to a very large extent. And then I want to look at your targeted sectors so that we know where we're going, and I really must say on industrial development, we are huge in the automotive industry, and it affects our province, KZN and Gauteng very much. When we talk about electricity, I don't want to make a question so long that we can't talk about or can't wait for answers. But there is a problem in the energy field, and I am not holding you responsible for the failings that we have in the energy industry. I would like to know, are there any plans in place or projects in place that will bring a quick delivery program? Is Sasol involved through your department? Is there the Mozambique gas pipeline? Is there something that can happen quicker than mid-duty or the current thing with Eskom here at Coburg. We were talking about SIPS projects yesterday, and I was wondering how your budget is involved in the SIPS program and how many of those projects you are going to monitor in terms of the Department of Economic Development schedule. I have seen your key interventions on slide 21 where you refer to the tool making for 250 students. I would like to ask you, we went to Kuka, and it was, we arrived there as a committee the day of their graduation. There were 50 students, I think, and it was a fantastic day. If you have trained 250 students in the past, I would like to ask whether they're still in South Africa, because it is a very much needed skill, it's expensive to train them, and are they all employed in our own industries? I hope there's a clause in their training program subsidy bursary system where they must work for the country for 5 years before they can even consider going elsewhere. Then in the film industry, I have got questions coming your way with regard to the support of black film groups who have complained in the press recently that they do not get sufficient money for production, and I don't know if it's just bad production. I have put the question to you, you don't have to answer it now, but it's something that we must look at, that it's not just some people that are getting. And then in the film industry, are the bursaries coming from your department or are they coming from arts and culture? Is it their responsibility? Policy framework, you refer to policy on various levels. Now we've been through policy and so on last time, and I'm wondering if we are going to have public participation in that framework as well, and whether this budget that we're looking at will provide for that. The rural development, you know, yesterday I was quite serious about, it all looks good on paper, but do we have sufficient to do what we're saying we're going to do? And when it comes to outcome number 4 on slide 16, and you talk about rural development and the incentive for procurement, the incentive for procurement, is that going to the FME in small business development, or is it staying within your department? And I think trade agreements, you have an extensive plan for trade agreements, and very often we have to approve these trade agreements afterwards. They come on our order paper, and we just read about them on the ATCs. Often we then have to go and do additional homework on how it affects us as a country, and it makes it very difficult. Is there not a way in which we can communicate better to support each other on these trade agreements to make sure that we do and say the right thing? I want to concur with one of my colleagues who referred to the Kwakwa areas and the previously the pre-94 projects. Some of them still survive. We think of Middelburg where the Lenin Group took over from one of those projects and then developed into quite a fantastic aerosol flavoring under Arms Bay, and the factory where the explosions were the other day last year. Yeah, it's still a fantastic project, it works well. But then we think of the boat industry that's not doing so well. In the Eastern Cape area, I don't know how it's doing in the Niger area, but the private boat industry is in a big problem. And are those incentives covered in this area or in this budget? and can we look at something like that? And Chairperson, thank you. I'll stop right there.
Yes. Honourable Sukha, can you be brief on that so that maybe hear when they arrive?
No, in fact, maybe because this is not the first last time, I am going to reserve my question on international relations because I think I want to go back to hear more on the international relations, in particular to our countries, FADEC, AU and so on. The trade agreements thereof, and the effect of that to South Africa. So I'm saying maybe I'll raise that question if I get a job, their business plan, I mean their business capital that I can write to them, and maybe EDG can respond. The second one would be on the advocacy. You know, here we are, maybe I'll present my program to them for my constituents so that we highlight those things that are doing, which impact to the unemployed youth. And so on, because look, the upgrades who are unemployed that can respond also to what, or I'm not sure whether the department does have a database of the unemployed graduates, so that when you need a skill, you don't go too much around, you just step from that data that we have. I know in the Eastern Cape, the Premier used to have it, we have that kind of thing, so that our learners or students or unemployed, when they look or seek for some jobs, it's already there without going to what was. There's a program that runs in the middle of the night in Kabo Wenen, where people are raising their concerns in terms of the unemployed. I'm just raising it aloud here, sorry to divert, but respond also to this. Where they just always complain, how fast I've graduated for the degree, 2005, no work, you know, and so on. And yet, I can see, if we can have this kind of a program in the department, it can take us without going to campaign as full capacity. You will campaign for through your service.
Can we give an opportunity to DTI? I'm hoping that we have some time. I noticed that there were still three questions. But let's see what time does it.
We'll give a response, and as we engage in more detail on this program, we'll also go into more detail. So I don't think we'll do it with everything, but let me just ask Stephen to respond to some, and then I'll come.
Thanks, Honourable Chair, and good morning, Honourable Members. If I can respond very briefly to the question around M&E, the Department of Monitoring and Evaluation is a relatively new department in government, and its focus is both at the broad level of monitoring the performance of government departments across the entire economy, across the entire system of government, as well as looking at specific programs for evaluation. What DTI's role is to support that process, and we cooperate with the Department of Performance Monitoring and Evaluation, but we also conduct evaluations within the department. So for example, last year the Business Process Services Scheme was evaluated, quite a detailed evaluation was undertaken. This year the SPI, the Support Program for Industrial Innovation, and the SRIP, the Technology and Human Resources industry program are being evaluated. More specifically on co-ops though, I think the DTI supported over 1,000 cooperatives in the last financial year. So the numbers are relatively high. But one of the reasons the department has started working with network facilitators is to ensure that there's a feedback loop to the department where co-ops might not be performing as well as the co-ops would have liked, or as well as the department would have liked. Clearly there's more that we can do in that space, but I think the network facilitators do play a role in ensuring that technical support is available. And of course the cooperative incentive scheme itself has an element where technical skills can be purchased using the DTI grant. So the idea is to provide that kind of technical support. Chairperson, if I can answer the question on the NDI side, I think it was Honourable Paninga that has raised the issue of the doubling of South Africa's FDI. In fact, it doubled in 1 year. So the figures for 2013 are around about US dollar 8 billion. And I think that the message that we get from many of the investors is that actually the outlook for the South African economy is relatively positive. FDI investors typically invest best with a medium-term outlook. So a year where the economy perhaps grows by 1% will not put those investors off. They're investing in South Africa for the long run, and they expect that as many other countries have experienced, the US economy, for example, contracted by 1% in the first quarter of this year. A full 1% contraction. So occasionally the quarterly data will show a contraction. Sometimes the quarterly data will show a significant increase. As DG was pointing out, quarterly GDP data is extremely volatile. So I don't think we should be put off too much on that on that front. Our sense on the foreign investment is that actually the outlook for the South African economy is quite strong. And you know, just to give you a quick list. Procter & Gamble, Unilever, Samsung, Nestle, Matthew Johnson, these are all big multinationals that have invested in South Africa over the last year or two. And the investment numbers are very substantial, as the $8 billion US dollars suggest. In addition to that, a number of domestic investors in the auto sector have made very substantial investments as well. So at the moment, our auto sector investment levels are at a record, expected to be around about $8 billion. Over the next year, which is a record for the auto sector. One last comment, Honourable Chair, on the GDP numbers. The published number of a contraction of 0.6% is one that the press in particular has really focused on. The actual contraction in the South African economy in quarter one was 0.15%. It was tiny, it was a really small contraction, 0.15%. What Statistics does is that they annualize the data, and that's what gives you the 0.6% contraction. So in actual fact, if we look at the GDP statistics, quarter one 2014, the economy is bigger than it was in quarter one 2013. Over the year, the economy has grown by around about 1.8%. It's simply quarter four 2013 versus quarter one 2014, where the economy is contracted, and the contraction has been 0.15%. It's a very small contraction. Of course, as ETI, we are concerned about any contraction in the economy, but we shouldn't be rushed into our economic policy overall when a very small contraction in the order of 0.15% has been in the context of a five-month platinum industry strike. Thanks, Chair.
Thanks, Stephen. Honourable Chair, very briefly then to especially answer Honourable Dehali's point. I think you make a valid point about cooperatives. Honourable Chair, the issue we have is now, as you mentioned, we're opening about 1,000 cooperatives a year now. The problem is we provide the supply side support, financial grants and so on. And what we find now is the sustainability depends more on market access, because once you produce a product, would you sell it to 365 days a year? So we are really, I mean, it's a difficult one, because as you know, historically now, the co-ops we are helping are generally community-based ones. It's cut off from the formal economy. So what we are trying to do is to develop really the linkages between the formal sector and the cooperative sector. So we're trying to work, but this is what we'll have to increase massively, working with, like, for example, Rainbow Chickens, to buy the chickens, the poultry from cooperatives. And then you have that, because as we know, Rainbow supplies KFC. Now, the only way you can get people that supply chain is by linking the established producer with the new black farmers and so on. So we're talking about Tiger Brands, those kind of companies, SAB, and so on. It's to locate now, once we give support to small business or to cooperatives, to link them into the supply chain, and that's the only way. So it's not more government officials to monitor small businesses. It's really, as you know, entrepreneurs and cooperatives can take care of the issue, but they just need access to market opportunities. So we want to shift the focus now from supply side, also demand side support, and that's, but it's a very complex area, because you're trying to link the, let's say, the first economy and the second economy up. But I think you're right about that is our next stage for cooperatives, is to link them into the supply side. I think Stephen had dealt with Honourable Van Leeuwen's point. The issue, Honourable Lodge, is the procurement. I unfortunately, currently, we are at 0%
for some of the procurement. So we wait off. So if you take, for example, the buses, up until a year ago, all those buses you saw during, for example, the 2010 World Cup we had, everybody's imported from Brazil, our buses. So we only now, after we've entered, what we've done is we've introduced designations where we've designated certain products for local procurement. So we started, for example, with buses, clothing and textiles and so on. So we're getting off from a very low base, but now we've got the target of 75%. So I think currently we're probably at 10% and less. So that is our 5-year target of moving to 75%. But if you take the general international norm, you will find that if you go to Germany, for example, all those trains are bought by Siemens. If you go to France, the TGV, all those trains are Alstom. You go to Korea, all the cars are Hyundai's, you know. So the point is, in a normal country, it's 100% local. And it's not even a law they have. It is just the normal, natural thing to do. But in South Africa, because of our history, we don't have that. So this target is to change our own mindset, the culture, amongst procurement officers, amongst consumers, to buy local. But we are very, very competitive. After we've done rolling stock and locomotives, we now, the minister visits a plant called Grindrod Rail in Pretoria West. And there they are making locomotives which are 30% cheaper than what the Chinese do. Now, if we can build locomotives at cost, it's a problem. It's just for people to get used to it, that South Africans can also make these products at well, to buy our own products. But we do have main capabilities that we must just revitalize. So that's the procurement target with regard to that. But thanks for raising it. Very quickly, on the incubators on the 90, that is what we want to achieve. We currently have 52, and there's another about a dozen or so that has also been approved in addition to. So currently we have about 60 incubators in the country. We want an additional 90. Our long-term target is, as I said, if you look at other countries, you have massive amount. In Brazil, for example, they have 4,000 incubators. And all those 4 times our size. But I'm just looking at that. So we want to move towards an additional 90 incubators. With regard to CEDA or the 30-day payment, I think we've just received the latest monitoring and evaluation report. And it looks like now all government departments are starting to get within the 30 days payment period. But as I said, it's been a long struggle to get there. We now at the 30-day period. But what we also did introduce was, in CEDA we have a hotline, which we introduced, was where companies not being paid by any government departments. We have given them a hotline to phone, and then CEDA will then take it up with that relevant department. So if the Department of Health is not paying you, you phone the CEDA hotline, and then they will then contact that department, so we speed it up. That has been in operation for a few years now, but as I said, we are gaining some traction. The latest monitoring and evaluation report of the president shows that at least the 30-day period is now working in most government departments.
On the question around whether we provide a revenue for the current industry, we don't do that. We provide initiatives and put it at the Department of Arts and Science that provides revenue. Thank you.
Conclusion,
continue.
Yeah. Just in conclusion, I think we covered most of the areas with regard to cooperatives. I'll conclude by maybe just touching on Honorable Lenny's point, and thanks for the positive comments you've made. But I think the issue about we are actually going through a bit of a bad patch, as it were, because of the significant labor unrest that we have. And so, but I think if you look at the broad storyline and where the economy is going, there's a massively positive trend. And as I said, I mean, as Stephen mentioned, the doubling of FDI, another example like that. So I think the key thing is not the narrative here is that whenever we hit a challenge, we become alarmist, and that sometimes it's important in a skeptical manner, as if this is now just we're heading straight for the abyss, and the economy is going to go off on the wrong track. I think that is the narrative we must change. And I think we have significant challenges, and we are starting to turn the corner, as I've just given you some examples about our innate capability and stuff. And that's why, as I indicated, our plan is really to revitalize our industrial sectors so that we can put our growth path onto just an higher trajectory. But it means we must be positive about our possibilities and overcome this negative narrative about this economy being in the wrong direction. Thanks, Ollie.
Thank you. We still have 15 minutes, so I'm going to allow those three hands. I noticed there are four now. It was first Honourable Vada, Honourable... Is it the three of you honourable members that next to that? You each wanted to ask a question. Let's have the three of you. Honourable Vada? Okay, and then have you as well.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm not going to ask too many questions. I think most of it has been... It's just a comment I wish to make, please allow me. I was very excited when the DG mentioned the issue of South Africa not having its own markets or the market being too small. This is directly related to what we are saying about salaries. If we can improve salaries in the country, we will create a market of our own. And I think South Africa is always going to be for investors, it's always going to be an excellent proposal because we have the resources in this country. We have the, everything economically, investors will make profits in South Africa. But what we need to indicate to our investors is that social stability is just as important. And the salaries go together with social stability. If we improve the salaries of our people in South Africa, what we will have is we will increase that market, we will build a market that we are looking for, and we will provide the long-term socio-economic stability that is so necessary and required for foreign investment. I just wanted to make this for the moment. Thank you.
Honourable Mandela, you still want to speak?
Chair, two issues. I know that your department is extremely capable to do this. Just my two comments is that with the lesser tax and the cheap land that we give to investors, can we really look into creating a modern day FDI? It has been a necessary evil for quite a long time. But then can we change it? Can we bring about rewards that are tangible in terms of socio-economic transformation that we want to see? The other issue is on the issue. I'm a layman and I'm sure you'll forgive me, teacher. But localization and beneficiation must be felt by ordinary men. Can the government look into going into that direction? I know that the latest thing that we still complain about is that the mining industry in this country has been built on the back of migrant labor. I have learned in 2012 that agriculture, particularly in Western Cape, was also built on the back of migrants. As we move towards inclusive growth, the issue of the Northern Cape and the Limpopo, can we build them in modern-day cities in appreciation of what we want to see in terms of inclusive growth and decent jobs? Thanks.
Thank you very much. Honourable Mukwena?
I think I forgot that one point. So the first thing I would say, please spend more money on the free state. That's the one thing. The second issue is, you talked about logistics, Harrisonet being one of the logistics hubs. There are two major corridors going through the Free State, one which is the N1 and the other being the N3, and both going to major three other hubs. What is the plan for the N1 in terms of logistics? Because that's a huge corridor between the entire west of the country, Cape Town and Johannesburg. Right? That was the one question. The other question one I think I forgot.
Okay.
No. Just one last question. Another question. Can we support our people to feed our nation? We're importing, and it's a point I raised again yesterday in the Economic Development Department discussions. We're importing chicken, we're importing fruit, we're importing glass, we're importing teaspoons.
We're importing wine.
Can we
a good wine.
Is it not possible for us to grow these industries within the borders of South Africa? Because I'm just worried that, you know, we're importing chicken from Brazil. It makes absolutely no sense to me that this is happening. We could be creating so many jobs, just feeding the nation. You know, we're producing chrome, we're producing nickel, we're producing all these things that could make spoons. But they're being made in China and import them there. And then the last point, please spend more money on the free school.
Thank you very much. Can we drift our questions from the time for them to respond as well?
Honourable Chairperson, I think the October skips one for a reason. Are electricity projects or energy projects that you may be addressing all those IBCs if there are any on your program? And the other one, I just want to help you when it comes to localization. You know, basically of whiskey and good fabric and wine. And all that preserves the policy for localization, especially at formal functions of parliament, etc., etc.
Thank you.
Okay, can we get...
Okay,
7 minutes.
Very quickly on, questions. I think we will spell out that for long, but I think the modernization, as you say, we have to, what we do is think with the problem, and this time to say, post the house but I think aligning your emphasis on the urbanization and modernization of our industrial and urban landscape, I think we are trying to keep the eye is also a good now raised protection for our poultry.
the recent newspaper, they are accusing the class and the government of doing just a little change, and they said they are going to commission to get a range of protection for our relationship. Of course, that we have to change the economic problem, and we have to do the opposite. We have to have self-protection ability. We're just doing what we're going to have to do, and we are not talking to you about the law.
You want to have the last word?
Just a very quick comment, Honourable Chair, if I may.
Sure.
Thanks, Honourable Chair. The issue of rural development were raised again. I thought it might be useful just to mention that one of the DTI's incentive schemes which mentioned in the presentation is the MCET, the Manufacturing Competitiveness Enhancement Program. And through that program, around about 1.5 billion rand has been committed to the agro-processing sector. It's actually accounting for 60% of the application on the MCET. So DTI is putting quite significant resources into agro-processing, and I can perhaps mention that DTI is also supporting the Astral Feed Mill, which, if I'm correct, is in the Free State. So that's quite a big investment right there. And then just one last comment is around the import issue that DG has alluded to. As government, there's a series of programs, whether it's designations, whether it's working with local suppliers to improve their capabilities, but up to now the private sector has been relatively slow to get on board. And although the local procurement board was signed by the private sector, it's not clear the extent to which the private sector is really committed to buying local as well. And I think that might be an additional area of consideration for the committee going forward. How do we ensure that not just government but the private sector is on board with buying local chicken, buying local machinery, etc. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much to our colleagues from DGI for the effort and time that you have allocated. I think that from the contribution to questions, it is apparent that we really value the insights that you have managed for us to gain. And we also want to thank the honorable members for your engagement. I get a sense that there is need for almost like an immediate continuation of some of the points. It could be because there are some things there that I reserve because I wanted to allow the members. But I also had a conversation with Minister Rob Davies, and that's helpful. So I want to ask you, Sir Ross, to just help us to say that. If we would, because Honourable Suka has raised it about communication with the DG, but I thought that you are our point of entry into communication with, ongoing communication with the department. So there's a Ross, your office is here in 120 Plain Street, and you have contact details. You can get a much more immediate response by engaging with us. Here is our Secretary of the Committee, Lupeka. You can also use him to get further information. But I also wanted to say that you have a resource person to the committee. Abdullah, if there's anything that you need to have research and things like that, there is, you can communicate with him. And then obviously we have here as well Zweli Banzi. And they all have their contact details so that they can give it to you. The question has been raised earlier on about our ongoing communication. I trust that we all have secretarial support so that while we may not have our own software at the moment, if, for example, we engage with one of the resource people, that they can, rather than making the hard copies, also make soft copies of documents available to us. We want to say to our people there at the back, thank you for your presence here. We trust that some of the expectations that you have had from having to sit in this forum will also be met. We want to assure you that the position that we are taking as Parliament, you know, Parliament is only when the NCOB and the National Assembly gets together. As Parliament, we have a commitment that we want to make this a people's parliament. We always welcome your presence here, but we also hope that very soon we would reach that stage where we can get you engaging by raising questions with us in the conversations as well. So you are not only a shadow here, but we really value as well the fact that you have been able to make the time to be with us. In my tradition, we would say, now we go for lunch. I can't say. But thank you very much.
Thank you.